Welcome to Crime Most French, a fortnightly podcast covering intriguing cases carried out on French soil. Researched and narrated by Cedric and rudely interrupted by me, Melanie. We're the true crime podcast, Old Alliance. Crack open, Le Vin, and let the mayhem commence.
This is episode 90, The Dreyfus Affair, part 2. This is part 2 of our coverage of the Dreyfus Affair. Dreyfus has been tried, found guilty, and sent to a penal colony to die.
Yeah, I think everybody needs to make sure they listen to the previous episode.
Yes. Generally, things look grim for Dreyfus at that point.
Oh, I mean, we've definitely left... Please say we've left the story at its lowest point, for the love of God.
Mathieu, who's Alfred Dreyfus's brother, is convinced that his brother is innocent. He spends all his time and all his money to create a movement in favour of a retrial. He tries everything, including meeting a woman in Le Havre who, under hypnosis, mentions to him the existence of a secret report. That secret report might be the one that was used in court, in secret, sent to the judges when they were deliberating.
Full of the bullshit documents.
The bullshit document. Remember to watch to listen to the previous episode. He had heard through Dr. Gilbert, who was a friend of the then President of the Republic, Félix IV, about something being fishy. Apparently, in a private conversation, Félix IV confirmed that fact to Dr. Gilbert. So he confirmed that there was some kind of report that had been used that was secret.
So within the circles of the great and the good of France, it was known that...
Yes, so the question was, did that woman hear about that report from, for example, the doctor before she was interviewed under hypnosis?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it confirmed after the fact? I don't have the exact dates of all these facts, so I don't know exactly in what order they happened.
Right.
Either she had a proper gift, and she somehow knew about that report without being told about it, or she had heard about it, and she just relayed the information, and she was an excuse to give the information to the Dreyfus family.
Right.
I suspect it's the latter.
Right.
Slowly, despite threats of arrests, constant monitoring by the secret services and traps created by the army, Mathieu, manages to convince a few moderates in the government that his brother might not be that guilty after all.
So his brother's clearly made of the same stern stuff.
Yes.
That his brother.
Oh yeah, he won't let go. He's the reason why the affair didn't die when he went to Devil's Island.
Yeah.
Because well, from that point on, he's the one who pushes for everything.
Yeah.
Dreyfus in prison just doesn't do anything. In fact, he doesn't even know what's happening.
Well, no, he's not informed of anything. He's got no power to, has he?
Yes, but he doesn't even know.
No, that's true. I mean, he's just kept in this little horrible bubble of an island.
Yes.
And knows nothing, yeah.
One of these moderates is a journalist called Bernard Lazare, who publishes the first pro-Dreyfus pamphlet.
Mm-hmm.
He also pioneers a new form of journalism, which will be called investigative journalism later.
All right, okay.
Because he decides that he wants to find out what actually happened. So he's curious, he wants to know, so he's going to look for what it is that actually happened.
He's kind of like the first Woodward and Bernstein.
Yes, essentially yes. As a result, slowly, the left-wing press, generally anti-army, traditionally anti-army, starts questioning the whole affair.
Right.
But that results in a huge anti-Semitic wave again in the public opinion.
Oh, yeah, because the right wing, no doubt, were doing their whole...
They were stirring everything, yes.
Whatever the contemporary expression of woke is to shut down the left of the way it is now.
Exactly. Because the public opinion doesn't want to imagine that Dreyfus could be innocent. As far as they're concerned, he's guilty. They don't want to hear that he might not be.
Oh, the wokerati.
Yes, exactly. Even the director of the military secret services isn't entirely convinced because he replaced the one that was there before.
The crooked one that was there before.
Yes. So, under request of his hierarchy, he charges two generals to increase the amount of evidence in the case to avoid any chance of a retrial.
Yeah, but it's easy when they've... They've compiled a whole load of bullshit. It's easy to find more bullshit. If you've got fake documents, it's very easy to produce more fake documents,
yes,
surely.
They're trying not to use fake documents. Well, they're trying to actually find evidence. The problem is they don't have any.
Okay.
So it's easy to produce more because more than zero is easy, but still they struggle. They just can't come up with anything. They have no evidence.
It's almost like he's not guilty.
Yes. But he doesn't want to leave it at that, so he decides to create some evidence himself.
Oh, who could have saw that coming?
The real traitor, who passed secret documents to the German services, is discovered in two separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
One is Mathieu Dreyfus, who collected the denunciation by a banker who was called James de Castro. And the other is the Army Secret Services in their inquiry into the leak. Mm-hmm. So they actually found where the leak came from.
Right, okay.
So they know, at least two groups of people know who actually transmitted that letter to the German embassy.
But it's crazy to think it was, you know, somebody who's been, you know, accused and has nothing to do with its brother that solves this military leak.
Yes.
It's insane.
Yes.
Oh, God.
The head of the military secret services is replaced again. Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a lot of musical chairs.
Revolving doors. Yeah.
The new one is called Georges Picard. He's kind of more logical and moderate than most of the ones who had this job before. It's lucky at that point in the story that the previous head of the military services falls very ill and can never go back to work. So he followed the affair from the start, and he requests all the documents that have been part of that story without intermediaries. So he doesn't want to be told about them.
Yeah, he wants
He doesn't want to read reports. He wants to see the actual original documents.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good.
And he discovers a note called The Little Blue, written by the German attaché and intercepted at the German embassy, before it was sent via the pneumatic system in Paris.
Oh, they had a pneumatic system?
Yeah, apparently. Cool. I've never heard of it, but there was one, apparently. It was to be sent to a French officer, Ferdinand Valsin-Esterhazy.
That sounds like a very name from the East.
And there's another letter that is also intercepted, which is written in pencil, that mentions a relationship with a French officer. So he finds in the documents that he's given two that seem to point to an officer and a second one that points to a named officer, Esterhazy.
Mm-hmm.
Picard quickly realizes that the writing
is the same.
Is exactly the same as the one in the original letter.
What, you mean it doesn't look like it's purposefully being copied your own writing?
Yes, exactly. And it clearly shows that it wasn't Dreyfus's, yes. So as a result, Picard becomes convinced that Dreyfus is innocent and he knows who is the actual leak, because he now has a second letter that is exactly the same writing and the guy is named in it.
So it does sound like it's somebody from maybe possibly Alsace and Lorraine.
Yes, he is from the East. I don't know exactly where from, but he's from the East.
The surname certainly sounds like it's from the East.
So he launches a secret inquiry into the case without notifying his hierarchy.
Well, that always goes down well.
It's not the best move for your career, but he really wanted to get to the bottom of this. It proves that Esterhazy had access to the information that was going to be passed to the German embassy. It also establishes that Esterhazy was routinely selling documents to the Germans. That wasn't the only time. But pretty much everything he gave them had no value. It was very little information that nobody cared that much.
He probably didn't have access to.
No, he didn't have access to much. And in fact, it has so little value that the German attaché, von Schwarzkoppen, drops him as a source in 1896 anyway.
All right.
So 2 years after the Dreyfus affair, the start of the Dreyfus affair, he's dropped as a leak because what he gives the Germans is worthless.
It's crap.
So they don't care. Yeah. They don't want him anymore. Esterhazy had been a mentor of the counter-espionage since 1870. And in fact, he worked in the same office as Robert-Joseph Henri, remember? That's the third time we hear about him.
Yeah.
From 1877 to 1890.
So he was the guy that was first given this document from the German.
He was collecting the bins.
The document that caused all the problems. He was the very first person to touch it.
He had the very source of the whole story. Picard establishes that Esterhazy had a very strong motive.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have someone that has a motive for a change. Money.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any and had debts.
Right.
Unlike Dreyfus, who we knew was loaded.
Was loaded, yeah.
Convinced, he has concluded his investigation and he knows the real culprit, he transfers the report to his hierarchy. His superiors respond by saying that the affair has already been tried and judged. And from that point on, they will try all they can to get rid of him. And they enroll his deputy, Commander Henri.
Eh? Oh no, not him.
Yeah, he's the deputy of the head of the Secret Services.
Oh, so heck.
He's used by the hierarchy to try to get rid of his boss.
Oh my God.
The army doesn't really want to admit that the entire affair was entirely made up and a miscarriage of justice, obviously. Yeah. And
they want all the problems to disappear.
Yes, and they also don't want to be seen as having fabricated evidence because that would be pretty bad.
Yeah, but which they did.
Yeah. So one of the things that the army does is to try to control public opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So they use the nationalist press for that. They leak information and do interviews and all that so that they repeat over and over again that it's Dreyfus, there's no doubt, he's been judged, he's been found guilty, it's him. But they make one mistake. By feeding information to those newspapers, they release information that had not been made public before. And that leads some journalists and writers and intellectuals and some members of the government to start doubting the whole thing because they, by mistake, release information that proves that, in fact, Dreyfus is not guilty.
Oh, but they're intellectuals. I'm sick fed up of listening to experts. What do experts know? Oh, Wokerati.
Yes. Picard tries again to convince his hierarchy that it's in their interest to say, mistakes have been made and Dreyfus is not guilty. We're getting back to France and we'll prosecute the real spy.
Mm-hmm.
They say no. And they try to get him rid of him even more. So he's posted in the east of France first, and then he's posted in Tunisia. That's pretty much as far as he can be.
Mm.
Because they want him away from the case. They don't want him involved in all that. He knows way too much. He's too good at finding evidence. No, so they want him away.
He's literally got stink lines coming off him at the moment. They need him away.
Yes. That's when Henri decided to act, the deputy.
Yes.
He takes trivial letters sent by Panizzani, Italian attaché, we mentioned him before.
Okay, right, yes.
He keeps the header of the letter and the signature and rewrites the body of the letter.
Holy shit!
It becomes what's called later the Henri fake. The new letter says that if the Italian government or Panizzani are asked about Dreyfus, they will deny any knowledge of that person so that nobody knows what really took place.
I'll tell you what, if this Henri dude doesn't end up on Devil's Island at the end, I'm going to be annoyed.
The document doesn't cut the mustard. Anybody looking at it knows that it's a fake. But it doesn't stop the generals who are in charge of the army from transferring the document to the war minister to make sure that the hierarchy doesn't doubt Dreyfus's guilt.
Is this still the same hugely incompetent war minister, or is it another one?
I don't know at that point, but it changes quite a lot, so I don't know if it's the same guy. But the strategy works anyway. The army decides to protect Esterhazy and prosecute Picard, who, according to them, didn't understand anything. Picard, who feels very isolated at that point.
Well, no wonder.
From above and below.
Yeah.
Talks about the whole affair to his friend and lawyer, Louis Lebois, and swears him to secrecy. So he talks to his lawyer but says, don't tell anyone what I'm telling you.
Right.
Lebois, however, being a lawyer, mentions it to his friend, who happens to be the vice president of the Senate, who then starts to doubt Dreyfus's guilt too.
Yeah.
And he in turn talks about that information that he got to other senior members of the political system.
Mm.
And the army hears about all that, and they are certain that Picard's the source. Technically, he's the source, but he's not the one who spread the information.
Yeah.
And then, at that point, starts the Picard affair, because they're going to have another cover-up and a whole bunch of fake documents and forgeries. But that's for another story, because otherwise we'll never end this one.
I was waiting to say, so we'll be doing the Picard affair. Oh,
there will be crossovers a few more times in this story. But it's a whole affair on its own.
Are we talking Picard, by the way, Picard?
Picquart.
Okay.
Yeah, not that the frozen food.
No, no.
Or the captain, same name.
Yes.
The Prodigious camp, at that point, learn who in November 1897 is the actual traitor and the spy via the banker, De Castro, we know. The reason why he talked to Matthew Dreyfus is his job was in writing. So he was working for the bank. And as we said, he was an expert in writing.
Yes.
And he recognized the writing as one of his debtors.
Oh, right, okay.
So he said, oh, I know who wrote that letter. It's not Dreyfus, it's Esterhazy. I know that dude, he owes me money. On the 11th of November 1897, the two lines of investigation merge.
Right.
So the one that came from the army and the one that came from the Dreyfus family. It's at that point that Mathieu receives confirmation that, yes, what he heard was right. And it is, in fact, Esterhazy, that's the spy, the one who transmitted the letter. Nothing to do with his brothers.
For the love of God, get my brother off of Devil's Island, you git.
At that point, the affair being public, the army has no choice but to open another inquiry, a public one. They should have done what Picard told them to do months earlier.
Yes.
But at that point, it's too late to backpedal. So Picard, who's back in Paris from Tunisia, publicly declares his doubts on Dreyfus' guilt based on his own investigation. And he does that in the press, and it makes a huge amount of noise. Because, I guess for the first time since 1894, there's some kind of proof of something.
Yeah.
Enters Émile Zola, the writer. He is a very well-known writer at the time. He had published a novel, but it was several volumes because Zola didn't do short. which was very, very well received and sold quite a lot.
Right.
So he's very famous at the time. And he's informed of the details of the affair by the vice president of the Senate. He had connections. He's convinced that Dreyfus is innocent. He publishes an article. The article is called Monsieur Schuer Kestner. It's after the name of the vice president of the Senate.
Okay.
In the Figaro. It's supposed to be article one of three.
Of course. He can't even write one article.
No,
he has to write three.
No, if you can write 5 pages instead of a sentence, go for 5 pages.
Oh, that's essentially the reason. Oh my God, that sounds like so many French authors.
Yes. But the readers of the Figaro don't receive that article very well at all.
Okay.
And there are threats of mass cancellation of subscriptions.
Oof.
So the editor of the newspaper refuses to publish the other two.
Oh, crap.
And he cuts relations with Zola. Zola enters in contact with writers and journalists, including the Clemenceau brothers. So Georges Clemenceau,
at
that point, is a journalist.
Okay.
He will later be Minister of War and Prime Minister during the First World War. And his holiday house is next door to my parents' holiday house.
I was going to say, I know Clemenceau very well.
Yeah.
So it's two Beatles.
At that point, it's two brothers, George and I want to say Justin, but I'm not entirely sure of the name of the
brother. Justin is such an old-fashioned name.
Anyway, who are journalists, and they get convinced that Dreyfus is innocent, and they take on the case. So they start digging as well. However, part of the political class at that point completely refuses to even entertain the idea that Dreyfus might be innocent, because that would have very, very bad repercussions for the government and the army. So they don't even want to hear about it. To the point where in the assembly, the then, let me remember, might have been Prime Minister, possibly, that opened the assembly on the 7th of December, declares that there's no Dreyfus affair, never has been, never will be.
Oh, that's good. Does that mean then he comes back from Devil's Island then? Because if there's no Dreyfus affair, that means he's not guilty. He needs to be back home.
Yeah, no. That doesn't mean that.
Did anybody really think that he wouldn't be here? Moved back to France.
Exactly. But they can't put the genie back in the bottle, no. Obviously.
So, no, no, that bell is rung.
Yes. So the army has to do something about the real traitor, obviously.
Mm.
So the army, the hierarchy, manipulates the investigation by pushing all the proof toward the evidence towards Picard. And they're trying really hard to deflect everything away from Esterhazy. So essentially, they're protecting Esterhazy and charging the guy who found the evidence. And it works. The inquiry goes into circles and it looks like it's going nowhere.
Jesus.
That's until Esterhazy's ex-mistress publishes in the Figaro a bunch of letters sent 10 years earlier, written by Esterhazy.
Uh-huh.
Where he expresses his hate for France and the French army.
Oh.
And that creates essentially a civil war in the press between those for and against Dreyfus. So until now, there were some kind of two camps.
Yeah.
And they didn't agree. But at that point, it's civil war in the press.
Oh, no, I mean, I can just imagine. And it's always, I've always said that, you know, if you're going to end a relationship with somebody, don't do it on bad terms.
Yes. So, for example, Clemenceau asks in L'Aurore, which is a left-wing newspaper, who protects the Prussian soldier, this guy is as a French soldier.
Mm.
How can justice stop when everything points to him being guilty?
Mm-hmm.
How is it possible that nothing is happening to him? Once again, the army is caught with their pants down.
Mm.
It's not the first time. It's not the last time either.
Oh, no.
They come up with a scheme again.
I wouldn't even say they've been caught with their pants down. They've been caught outside in the nude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it will happen again. Because clearly, when people were worried that it was morons at the head of the army, they were right because they were morons.
Oh, yeah.
So they come up with a scheme. They're going to put Esterhazy on trial so that they can acquit him. And that would be the end of the whole story.
They're really, really flogging that dead horse, aren't they?
Yes. There was a rule at the time called res judicata pro veritare ebitur, which means the thing judged is considered true. So they want to judge him, find him innocent, and therefore he's innocent. That's their plan.
Right.
Of course, it's a military court. Duh.
Yeah.
So they don't have to show anything and nobody is witness to anything.
Yeah.
So it starts on the 10th of January 1898.
Mm-hmm.
He's given the questions in advance. He is coached for the answers. Dreyfus's family is refused the right to be civil party in the case. It happens behind closed doors.
I was going to say, it will be all locked behind closed doors. Yeah.
Yep. The army's experts decide that the writing is clearly not Esterhazy's writing in the original letter. The witnesses for the prosecution are booed in court. And once again, the proceedings turn against Picard, who is not on trial.
No.
But somehow, because everything is...
It's his fault.
Everybody is pressured by the army because it's an army court.
Yeah.
Anyway, suddenly Esterhazy's trial turns into Picard's trial.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's a complete joke. And as a result, Esterhazy is unanimously found not guilty after 3 minutes of deliberation. It barely had time to close the door.
Oh my God.
To be sure that he's out of reach, because they really don't want him to be involved in anything or say anything, he leaves the country and he lives in London until the end of his life in 1920. The Dreyfus camp understands that the polite disagreement that has been their policy so far doesn't work. Because if you say, oh no, we should really investigate and we should be careful and consider evidence carefully, and the army can actually manipulate the whole justice system, you're kind of at a disadvantage.
Mm.
So they understand that that's the way it's going to work.
So basically what you're saying is shit's going to get real.
So they start to be a bit more aggressive, yes. Which the anti-Griffiths camp doesn't take lightly, and riots start all over the country.
Holy shit.
The army, of course, continues to charge Picard because that's the guy. So they arrest him and they accuse him of breaking professional discretion by having transmitted information to his lawyer.
So now he's on trial.
Yes, now he's actually on trial.
Oh my God. Oh, this is ludicrous.
Yeah, the army is trying really hard to cover their ass. Yes. As part of the more aggressive action for the pro-Dreyfus camp, Zola starts pushing to push harder.
Yep.
That's when, remember, he was trying to publish a series of articles in the Figaro.
He only got the one out of his three published.
So this time he publishes in L'Aurore, left-wing newspaper, who's not going to commit cutting off, the famous J'accuse article on the 13th of January 1898.
So, I mean, that will be the vast majority of people will know this expression, J'accuse.
Yes.
Everybody, you know, uses it, and this is where it comes
from. That's the article it comes from, yes. The article actually names names, most of them in the army, of everybody involved, including people in the government.
So the gloves are really off.
Oh, the gloves are off at that point. It's the first time that everything comes out in the open.
Right.
So he essentially publishes everything that is known about the case.
They all publish and be damned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's slightly dishonest in bits of it because he emphasizes the bits that are really useful for his case and minimizes a little bit of the others. But most of it is actually true.
I mean, there is no such thing as kind of like straight, honest.
Well, he was called out on that. Yeah. And he said that he never pretended to be a historian.
Oh, well, okay.
He's a journalist. And that makes a lot of noise, as you can imagine.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
And that's why we know about the expression J'accuse.
Yeah.
His aim is not just to put things in the open, because anybody could have done that. His aim is to push the government and the army to charge him and put him on trial.
Oh, my God.
Because if they charge him, they have to prove what they charge him with, because it would be in a civilian court.
Mm.
They can't do it behind closed doors. Mm. They can't have secret documents.
No.
So they want him, he wants himself being on trial for having published that information, and they would have to prove that it's not true, and he knows they can't.
Yeah.
That doesn't stop them, because they take the bait, and he is prosecuted for slander.
Oh my God, these army dudes are dicks.
Yes. On the 15th of January, a newspaper called Le Temps publishes a petition by a lot of intellectuals demanding a retrial for Dreyfus. It makes a lot of noise as well.
Mm.
Enough that on the 20th of January, a Catholic MP manages to push a vote to prosecute Zola. And the MPs vote yes by 312 against 122.
Wow.
Because they decide that he's the source of all those troubles. He's the reason why there's a petition and it's making a lot of noise. And therefore, they want him in jail. And that's the MPs.
I don't think they realize it's more of a hydra. I mean, if you get
they're idiots. They still believe that one.
Yeah.
That's the big difference between a monarchy and a republic.
Yeah.
You can cut off the head of a republic. It makes no difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Someone else will take the place and it will continue.
Yeah.
Whereas a monarchy, you cut the king's head. Would it survive? Not sure.
And also, I mean, if you cut the head off of a, you know, like a literary intellectual, a French literary intellectual, there are a dozen more in the background, more than willing to come and, you know, take his place.
Yeah, exactly. And on the term intellectual, since we're talking about it, it was coined in during the Dreyfus affair. It didn't exist before.
All right, okay.
It was a pejorative term at the time. That was referring to writers, philosophers, and thinkers that were starting to side with Dreyfus, and it was coined by the right wing newspapers.
As no doubt as a derogatory term.
It was totally derogatory.
So what we're talking, intellectualism is actually the equivalent of wokeism then in that case.
Yes, but they reappropriated the term. Clemenceau did that.
Right,
because he used it in his articles to describe himself and the people in favor of Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
So they were accused of being intellectuals, and they said, yeah, we're intellectuals, essentially. So he reappropriated the term, and now we understand it as people who actually think, but at the time it wasn't that. It just meant people who waste time thinking, getting nowhere, and talking rubbish. So as expected, the new war minister, I have no idea what number it is, must be number 20 by that point, presses charges against Zola and Alexandre Perreux. Perreux is the owner of L'Aurore. The newspaper.
Right.
for slander.
Mm-hmm.
So interestingly, slander at the time was punished in a criminal trial, whereas anti-Semitic publications weren't. So you could be anti-Semitic, you could say anything you wanted about the Jews, that was okay. But if you said something about someone that they are a spy, for example, you would be sent to trial. So the trial runs from the 7th of February to the 23rd of February 1898 in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
It concentrates on only 18 lines of the J'accuse article, nice, which was a whole front page.
Mm-hmm.
Zola and his lawyer, in return, to defend him, called 200 witnesses.
200, that's a lot of people.
And as planned, that plan works.
Uh-huh.
Everything about Dreyfus affair is part of the trial.
Right.
So everything is published.
Uh-huh.
Everything is known. The newspapers.
So everything that's been behind closed doors,
yes,
is now public.
Yes.
Right.
Because they accuse him of slander, they have to prove that
what he's saying
is not true.
Exactly. Uh-huh.
So they have to get the documents out.
So it's called their bluff big time.
Yes. Oh, they took the bait and they're idiots because that was obvious, but they didn't see it coming. The newspapers published daily accounts.
Mm, of course.
Every day.
I bet everybody was reading.
And millions of people read about all that stuff.
Of course.
The anti-Dreyfus camp organizes riots around the tribunal. And the police has to intervene and protect Zola every time he comes in and out.
Wow.
Because otherwise he's going to be lynched. Of course, the collusion between the political system and the army does its work again. It becomes obvious very quickly that the judges have been briefed. And they try to kind of juggle the law to stop debates from mentioning actual information about the Dreyfus affair.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Even though that is what the trial is about.
Yeah. But they're there trying to cover each other's asses.
The president of the tribunal has a phrase that he uses about a dozen times during the trial that is very famous, and it's "the question won't be asked." And he says that a lot every time it goes to something a bit too sensitive or bad for the prosecution.
Or just collude to it.
Yep, and it's now famous. And it works.
Elude.
Zola is sentenced to 1 year in prison and 3,000 francs fine.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
The maximum possible for a slander case.
Oh, it's just... How many more people are going to end up in prison?
I know. It's another writer called Octave Mirbeau who pays 7,525 francs to cover the fine and the court costs for Zola.
Yeah, right, okay.
But Zola is happy that the plan worked well enough
because
everything is now in the public eye. Everything is now known about what's been going on. So even though he's guilty and will go to prison, he managed to reach his goal. During the case, there were even interviews with military personnel who were actually saying that Dreyfus wasn't guilty because they knew they had seen documents and all that. So really, even the army is now breaking up into two camps. As a result of the trial, a senator, Ludovic Triarieux, and a lawyer, Paul Violet, found the League of Defense of Human Rights to defend human rights at the time and still exists and is still very well known.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing that came from the Dreyfus affair. On the 2nd of April, Zola's appeal receives a favorable answer from the court.
Right.
That now things are getting complicated. The appeal is based on the fact that the charge against him should have been brought up by the war council, not by the war minister.
Right, okay.
So it was.
So the body,
it's a technicality.
Rather than the individual.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
The War Council members don't like that, and they press charges against Zola for slander again.
For God's sake. It's like we're stuck in a loop.
Yeah. And this time the trial is transferred to Versailles instead of Paris because they think that the court and the public opinion in Versailles is going to be more in favor of the army.
Yeah.
And on day one of the trial, Zola's lawyer appeals because of the change of jurisdiction. Why would he be prosecuted in Versailles?
Yes.
That's nothing to do with Versailles. So the trial is suspended until the 18th of July. In the meantime, Zola is advised by his supporters that he should leave the country and go to the UK because otherwise he's going to end up in jail. So he does. And I think, and I didn't have time to check, I think he moves to Guernsey. He has a house on the beach.
Oh, right. Okay. It's kind of like halfway house, isn't it?
Yeah, it's technically French territorial waters, but UK... territory.
Yeah,
though.
just for those outside of Europe.
Yes.
There's honestly, you can see from Dover, you can see to Calais.
Yes, 27 kilometres.
The distance between the two countries are very, very, you know.
Oh, yeah, but Guernsey and Jersey are in
the left.
In Normandy.
They're off to the left, yes. They're not.
They're even closer to the coast. You can actually see them
exactly.
Most days.
Exactly. Yeah, even that small distance. He didn't even travel that small a distance.
No, there are
two islands.
Yes.
No. I don't know how many. Is it three?
Jersey, Guernsey, and I never remember the third one.
Is it Alderney, maybe? Might be Alderney.
I can't remember.
Anyway, yes, these three islands, which are technically French, but for some reason are British.
I don't know.
And so Zola ends up there.
Yes. It's the same when Voltaire was trying to hide from the government. Mm-hmm. He had a house that had a garden in Switzerland.
Yes.
And when the roses knocked at his door, he would just go to the bottom of the garden and it would be technically in Switzerland.
Same thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, you don't have to go very far.
No.
There is a saying in French, which is that the better is the enemy of the good. It means that if you try to achieve perfection, you might undo the good you have achieved so far.
Okay.
And that's exactly what happens next. After the general elections of 1898, the new war minister, number 45, called Cavaignac. He must be for this part of the country.
I was thinking that.
Possibly south of here. Is put in place. He is a strong believer that Dreyfus is guilty. And he's also really pissed at Esterhazy, who he sees as a crook and a blackmailer.
You can't have it that Dreyfus is guilty and the guy who is actually guilty.
But that's what he wants.
You can't have it that way.
Yeah, that's what he wants. So he decides that he wants once and for all to prove that Dreyfus was guilty of treason and that the whole affair will go away forever. Unfortunately for him, he doesn't actually know the details of the case. Because he's obviously lazy.
Well, he's not been reading.
Yeah. He bases his opinion on approximations and second-hand information. Sounds familiar?
Yep.
Seeing that the evidence hasn't been handled properly, he decides to take everything from scratch with his aides. When asked about it in Parliament, he says that he found three pieces of evidence among 1,000 that prove beyond any possible doubt that Dreyfus is guilty.
Mm-hmm.
The Parliament, who has always been on the side of let's make it go away, is ecstatic at that point.
Of course.
And it votes at 572 in favour. That's pretty much unanimous.
Yeah.
One or two might have been ill on that day.
Yeah.
To display these three documents in all 36,000 communes in France. Because they want everybody to see those three documents.
Look, we were right. Yes. We're good after all.
Unfortunately, nobody read the documents. And two of these have absolutely nothing to do with the case. And the third one is Henri's fake. So, unfortunately, inadvertently, the minister has admitted in his speech to the parliament, and also by showing evidence, that the defence, the Jefferson's defence,
mm-hmm.
hadn't had access to all pieces in the case.
Yeah.
Especially that secret report.
Yes.
And he mentions it.
The secret fake report.
Yes. So, as a consequence, Jefferson's sister appeals the original trial on the basis that he can't possibly have defended himself against evidence that he wasn't given.
Yeah. I mean, we've all seen it in American court cases. You cannot introduce stuff that wasn't in discovery.
Yes.
It's the same the world over.
Yes.
You can't just manipulate the facts after the fact.
Yes. But at the time, she had tried to appeal.
Yeah.
But because she didn't have anything, it was decided to be non-receivable. But now she had evidence because the minister himself said to the parliament, there's that stuff that we haven't given him.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, those Dreyfus siblings are worth their weight in gold.
Oh, yeah. So Picard also declares to the press that he's working to prove to any court in the land that two of the pieces are irrelevant and one is fake, which gets him 12 more months in prison.
Oh my God.
He was already in prison at the time.
I mean, God love this guy. I mean, he's just gone to hell and back for something.
That is not even him, but he was convinced.
Technically nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
This is just insane.
Yeah. Because he was in prison because of the Sandow case in Versailles.
Yeah.
In the process of examining the evidence, on the 13th of August in the evening, Captain Quigny, who is working at candlelight, because it was dark, observes that the Henry document shows different paper lines in the header, footer, and middle of the letter. Remember, that's the fake that Henry created.
Yeah, real proof that it's a complete...
Exactly.
Fake.
Yep. And he reports that to his hierarchy, saying, that document is a fake.
Mm.
That's long after it had been published in all 36,000 communes in the country, because nobody had ever looked.
Isn't it just fabulous? They've shown the whole bloody country their bad, dodgy evidence.
Yep. And of course, not only is bad evidence, but it's public.
Yep.
So they can't say, oh, it never happened.
Yeah.
So in the an inquiry commission is created to look into that document and to look into Esterhazy. Remember, he's still innocent and he's been covered by the army, so he's just living in London as a free guy.
Oh, yes, I forgot he died on a runner.
Yeah. He's recalled
uh-huh.
and questioned, and he completely panics when he's questioned.
And falls like a cheek tent?
Yep, and he confesses to his close relationship with Dupaty. Remember, he was the one investigating Dreyfus originally.
Yeah.
Now there is an obvious link between the army, its hierarchy, and a traitor.
Mm.
And that doesn't look good.
No.
On the 30th of August, Cavaignac decides that he has no choice but to question Henri about all that. Because finally, somebody's asking him questions.
Yeah, yeah. What? How has this got different watermarks? And
yes.
Yeah.
During the few hours of questioning, he breaks down and confesses everything.
Right, it's all going in the right direction.
Yeah, unlike Dreyfus, who never confessed, these two are confessing very fast. He's arrested and sent to jail, and he commits suicide by cutting his throat with a razor.
What a...
In prison.
What a giant yellow belly scumbag.
Yes. All that is a complete mess, and the government has enough of the whole thing, so they fire Cavaignac. So he's no longer a minister of war.
Well, good.
None of that changes his mind. Though he remains an anti-Dreyfus for the rest of his life.
Do you have to be an arse to do that role? Because they have seemed to have
to a certain extent, I guess.
I mean, they seem to have caused so much of a mess.
Yeah. The behaviours we see today with people supporting politicians, whatever they do or say, even when they create ridiculous stories and justify their actions by complete nonsense, are obviously not...
it's not a new thing at all. No.
Yeah, they existed at the time. So, for example, for some anti-Semitic newspapers, seeing Henri's confession of having created fake documents is inverted, and they invent the concept of patriotic fake, saying that he was a hero for risking his career and his life by creating fake documents that led to Dreyfus's conviction, because Dreyfus was guilty. One newspaper even organizes a subscription to build a statue to him, and they collect 131,000 francs, which is quite a lot at the time. So even though it's clear that he created fakes, he lied, his lies led to the conviction of an innocent man, they still managed to turn the story into him being a hero. That's exactly what we see in the US today.
I mean, is this guy... Does he have any German relatives that are called Drumpf?
Totump, yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just how on earth you would want to build a statue to somebody who's...
Clearly a liar. Yeah, I know. But he serves his purpose.
And not only that, you know, doesn't have the cojones to... You know, say, you're right, I did fake it, and, you know... But no, I'm gonna, you know... Admit I was wrong and then kill myself, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just, ugh. All the time, I'm now worried that something awful is happening to Dreyfus in Devil's Island.
He's still on his island and he doesn't even know any of that.
I know.
So for several months after that, the war ministers continue changing. They come and go. Some of them don't even stay long enough to be approved by the parliament. It's like they are appointed and they go the next day.
Well, it sounds like the mooch.
Yep. Under pressure from the army, most of them decide either to refuse a retrial for Dreyfus against the opinion of the appeal court, who said he has to be retried.
Well, it has to be, of course. I mean, if you've got somebody who's clearly guilty of that crime,
Yeah.
Even stretching it, calling it a crime, because it was never a crime in the first place.
Yeah, but...
Oh, it's just... The,
so
the,
either they say they refuse a retrial, or they say that they can't accept a retrial and they quit. So they just... It's one minister after another for a while. And eventually a moderate called Charles Dupuis is appointed, and he stays. He had covered up the action of the 1894 war minister. And he now says that he will accept the appeals court decision, and he will stop the action of those who wanted to kill the affair again.
Yeah.
So he says, okay, we'll be open now. It's not entirely that, though. The president of the... It's not that simple.
Right.
The president of the civil appeal court accuses via newspaper the criminal appeal court of being pro-Dreyfus. He's forced to quit because that's not what the judge does.
No.
But the consequence is that the whole civil court team, the judges, can't possibly be in charge of the retrial.
No.
So the parliament plus the senate now have to handle the case because there's nothing higher than the appeal court.
No, okay.
So now it goes to the parliament the senate, which leads to a complete blockage because they can't agree on anything.
No, of course. When are we ever expecting politicians to agree on anything?
Yeah, and nobody can get to a decision.
Yeah.
So it snowballs, and after the presidential elections of 1898, I think, the anti-Dreyfus Félix IV, who died, is replaced by pro-Dreyfus Émile Loubet.
Yay.
Émile Loubet is attacked.
Oh, no.
It might have been an assassination attempt. We are not completely sure, but somebody tried to do bad things to him.
Mm.
There is a coup attempt as well, but the army didn't follow because obviously they weren't too sure that they should. And it creates a reaction in the Republican camp.
Yeah.
So the Republicans become more pro-Republic.
Yeah.
And they decide to uphold the law against the anti-Semitic and far-right groups.
Mm.
At that point, the political system is completely remodeled. So instead of being left and right, they're pro and against Dreyfus. And you have people from both sides of the political spectrum. So the whole political spectrum completely changes at that point.
It's just everything is just broken.
Yeah.
I can't see how it could get any more broken.
We'll see.
Oh, God.
Finally, on the 29th of October 1898, after a vote within the government, the justice minister calls on the highest court to retry Dreyfus.
Right.
So the government decides, okay, the Court of Appeal says it has to be done. The parliament can't decide.
Yeah.
It has to be done.
Okay.
The anti-Semitic press organizes a campaign against the judge. Sounds familiar?
Yeah.
Accusing them of pretty much everything, from being a Jew when they are Protestants and they go to church, of fraud, of treason, of absolutely everything.
Everything, yeah.
Something will stick eventually.
Of cross-dressing.
Sounds very familiar.
Of having heaps of affairs, of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, all that.
I can imagine.
Yep. Nothing we see at the moment is new, really.
No.
As the additional inquiry is ordered by the court, and as it progresses, more elements in the Dreyfus affair appear. Even the ex-war minister, Cavaignac, trying to prove Dreyfus' guilt, ends up innocenting him by putting together a timeline of the whole affair that proves that he can't possibly be the person who wrote the letter.
So
they are trying to prove that the whole thing has happened, and in the process they prove that the whole thing can't have happened.
Excellent.
Picard, still working hard to prove that Dreyfus is innocent.
And this is from jail, presumably, still, is it?
Yep. Demonstrates that he demonstrates the mechanisms and the errors that were committed during the whole thing and Dreyfus' sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
And then he proves the conspiracy to cover it up. The court obtains access to the secret report, finally.
Right.
That was used to convict Dreyfus. But even though things are not going well for the anti-Griffiths camp, things are not finished.
Right.
On the 9th of October, the appeal court publishes its finding. Two main things are highlighted. Esterhazy has clearly used the same paper as the one from another letter that was found in the inquiry to write the original letter that was found in the embassy. So they can say
the this piece is of paper, in, the very first piece of paper that was cut with this, in six pieces.
Yes.
Right.
He has used that exact same paper.
Right.
And if you remember, maybe you don't remember, paper at the time used to have things that you could see in transparency.
Watermarks. Watermarks, yeah.
Yeah. They can prove that he had exactly the same paper in his possession. And also, they prove, the Pierce Court inquiry proves that the report is completely empty of evidence, the secret report.
Right.
That completely destroys Dreyfus's conviction.
Mm-hmm.
However, the court also investigates the previous members of the court, those who refused to accept the new investigation.
Right.
And its findings lead the court to invalidate itself from further proceedings.
What the?
Because they show that the previous judges are so much involved in the case, had received so much pressure from the army, that the whole court system can't possibly be trusted to retry Dreyfus.
Oh, for crying.
Including themselves.
Lord, for crying. They recuse themselves.
They recuse themselves because the whole system is so bad.
This is just ridiculous.
Yes. So it's the civil court that takes over, because
right.
that was the criminal court. The president of the civil court orders an additional investigation again, with 10 more witnesses, who invalidates even more of the story put forward by the army.
Holy shit.
The conclusions of that additional investigation is that the original letter is clearly not from Dreyfus, and therefore there was no case against him. So it agrees with the finding of the criminal courts of appeal.
Okay.
On the 3rd of June 1899, Dreyfus's conviction is formally broken and the retrial is allowed. He's not innocent.
He's
going
quitted.
To be retried.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Zola comes back to France.
Right.
Picard is freed.
Right.
Finally, from his prison.
Yeah.
And the war minister at the time is charged with illegally transmitting secret documents. So things are starting to turn.
Right. But now I just, every time I think it's going Dreyfus's way, you pull the rug from underneath me.
No, it's just what happened. And we are 5 years after the original trial at that point.
Oh, it's just ridiculous.
Nothing is simple in that story.
No.
So the new trial takes place in Rennes, again in a military court.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's all behind closed doors again.
But it was a military affair originally.
Yes.
So if you retry it, it has to be retried by a military tribunal.
Fair enough.
Dreyfus at that point hasn't been told of any of that. He learns about it and what's been happening in Metropole when he receives the judgment of the appeals court in late 1898, early in 1899.
Wow, okay. So
until then, he had no clue what was going on.
He had no clue, so it's almost 5 years in the 4 years in the dark.
Exactly, because everything he receives is heavily censored.
Of course.
First by the government and then by the guards on the island.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, he knows absolutely nothing of all that. So he's sent back to France because he's no longer guilty.
Oh, thank God.
So he can't be a prisoner. He's transported as a prisoner, though. And immediately arrested when he puts his feet on the ground in Brittany to be sent to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Because now he's awaiting trial again. At least it's not in the Devil's Island, but still.
Mm.
The trial starts in the military court in Rennes on the 17th of August 1899. It's a complete joke, of course. The appeals court's report and its decision are completely ignored. Where the confession of Henri and... During the new trial, the confessions of Henri and Esterhazy are not used. The evidence proving that the documents created by Henri are fake are not used.
They shouldn't just be used, surely.
The entire military hierarchy is allowed to testify against Dreyfus. Without a single piece of evidence.
I knew you were going to pull the rug out from underneath me again.
Yes, one of Dreyfus's lawyers, it's a very complicated case as well. He has two lawyers. One wants to be moderate and go logically through everything and prove Dreyfus's innocence.
Mm-hmm.
The other one wants to be way more aggressive, and they clash. And as a result, his defense is kind of, neither of those two things. But anyway, one of his lawyers, the more aggressive one, is attacked and somebody tries to assassinate him outside the court.
Holy shit.
Yes. He is actually very badly wounded.
Oh my God.
He is sent to hospital.
Uh-huh.
And it takes him a week to manage to get out of hospital and come back to court. But in the meantime, the prosecution's witnesses have been questioned.
Yeah.
And he wasn't involved.
Oh,
but
no.
That's okay.
Okay.
For the military court, apparently.
Right. That doesn't sound right, but never mind.
That doesn't sound right, but that's allowed. The Dreyfus camp is under heavy pressure from the government to go easy on the army again. And in exchange, they're kind of told, if you are nice to the army and you don't push it too far, we'll acquit Dreyfus. So they think about it. Dreyfus doesn't want it, but he's kind of convinced to accept.
Yeah.
So they go with it, but it was a trap.
Oh, no.
Because, again, nothing is that simple in that story. On the 9th of September, 1899, Dreyfus is found guilty of treason with attenuating circumstances. And that's very interesting. It's not black and white as it looks. The first sentence was 5-2, so he was one away from being acquitted. Secondly, what is treason with attenuating circumstances? That doesn't mean anything. That's not a thing that exists.
No.
But the thinking now is that the judges at the time wanted to send a message that they had to find him guilty, but they knew he wasn't. So they kind of make him guilty of treason, but not entirely his fault.
So hang on.
Which is completely meaningless.
This sounds like a bit like an Alfred plea.
It kind of sounds like an Alfred plea coming from the judges.
Yes.
Yes.
We've got enough stuff to know that you're innocent, but we can't declare you innocent.
Essentially, yes. It's like a reversed Alfred plea. It's really weird. That's never been used before or since. It's not a thing. So they essentially what they're saying is that they can't break the 1894 conviction because that would send like shockwaves in the whole country.
Dude,
so they can't
know
do
you're
it.
Innocent, but you know,
we'll you're going to
things.
Be...
We'll break things if we say that you're innocent.
Yes, exactly. So
what a steaming pile of shit.
So you're going to prison for 10 years. The next day, Dreyfus appeals.
Oh, well, yeah.
And for the first time, the president of the council, is the equivalent of the prime minister now, offers a pardon straight away.
Right.
For Dreyfus,
but that would mean that he was basically saying,
exactly,
I'm a spy.
Exactly. For him, it would be confessing that he actually did something wrong when he didn't.
No, he didn't. No.
You can't be pardoned for a crime you didn't commit.
Exactly.
So
he said, fuck you.
Well, he wants to. But at the same time, he doesn't want to go back to Guyana.
Well, no.
Because he's been there for a few years and it's not a nice place.
No.
He's been away from his family for most of 5 years.
Yeah.
He's totally exhausted. When he came back from Guyana, he looked like he had aged by 20 years.
Yeah.
So he decides to go with it.
All right, okay.
So he accepts the pardon and on the 21st of September 1899, he's freed.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, his family have fought so much for him. It's not just him. So, yeah, I can understand why he did it. And not just for himself, but for his family.
But again, nothing is that simple.
Oh, God.
For good measure, the president of the council, the prime minister, publishes an amnesty for everybody involved in the case on the 17th of December, 1899.
Crying out loud.
So that means that the real traitor is free.
Yeah.
That means that everybody... All the army generals and et cetera that covered up and were found out are now innocent because they've been pardoned.
Well, the good thing is, of course, Henri's dead, so he...
Yes.
He, yeah, he's
but
Esterhazy
is now free as well, even though he's the spy.
Yes.
So he's free
well.
And he goes back to London. The only ones that are not free are Picard and Zola, who are still under sentence from the slander case. The reactions to the judgment are not as bad as you would expect.
Okay.
You would expect people to get really pissed off and riots. And not really. The whole population just accepts that that's the only outcome that was possible, that could possibly happen.
Okay. I would imagine everybody in the country was just like, oh, Jesus, dude,
everybody
just
had enough.
End it. Just
yes, exactly.
End it.
So, in fact, the most violent reactions are outside the country. Mm. There's riots in 20 capitals around the world.
Wow.
But not in France.
Wow.
The Lord Chief Justice in the UK even writes a report for Victoria saying that the army court didn't know the law, that they didn't have enough experience, and they only acted in a way that was good for the army. So he's totally pissed off at the results of the case. He was actually in the courtroom during the trial,
oh, right,
the retrial.
Okay. So he tells him, Victoria is not amused.
Well, he writes the report for Victoria, so yes, she knows what was going on. Over the next few years, many accounts of the affair are published by various people. Ibn Esterhazy publishes memoirs where he contradicts pretty much everything.
No, he's a scumbag.
He's a scumbag, but he wants to publish his memoirs.
He can fuck right off.
Yeah. Zola dies in 1902.
Mm-hmm.
In 1902, after the general elections, Jean Jaurès is the new leader of the Socialist Party. Jean Jaurès sided with Dreyfus as well, with Zola. He reopens the affair in a speech that he does, where he lists all the fake documents that were used in the trial.
Mm.
And in that speech, he particularly insists on the resignation letter of one of the generals that led the inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
And in that letter, the general essentially confesses to having forced by his hierarchy to use fake documents, including a new one that turned up, a new fake document that is allegedly an annotated version by William II of Germany, where he annotates the original letter.
The one Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That the original letter that was found in the bin, apparently he would have had one where he wrote notes on it, and somehow it emerges at some point.
Of course.
So he uses all that to say that's all a big joke. And as a result, the president of the council, prime minister, orders a new inquiry by the army, because that thing is never going to die.
Mm.
This time the secret services are raided and their documents are searched.
Mm-hmm.
So they're becoming the bad guy, finally.
Finally, yeah.
Many obvious fake documents are found. The war minister writes a report to the president of the council based on those findings.
Mm.
Then for 2 years, various proceedings take place. I'm not going to go into the details because that will be pages and pages again. Resulting in the 9th of March 1905, in the state prosecutor demanding the renunciation of the 1894 sentence. Remember, that's the one that the retrial didn't want to break.
Yes.
So now the minister says, okay, that's just a joke. It has to be broken. It has to be said that it was wrong. That takes a while because that only happens in 1982. it takes nearly 80 years for the army to decide that, yes, that judgment in 1894 was in fact not right.
Oh my God, the balls of them.
Yes. But at that point, all the decisions of the court since 1894 are invalidated, and Dreyfus is finally found innocent. So he's no longer pardoned, he's actually innocent.
But you're not telling me he was still alive at that point.
He's still alive at that point.
Really?
He wasn't that old when it started.
But remember, he did 5 years on Dreyfus Island.
Oh, he looked old in the photos.
Yeah.
But he wasn't that old. He was a new officer at the start in 1894.
Yeah.
Remember, they thought he was the intern.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So he was fairly junior at the time. He was a high-ranking officer, but junior in the hierarchy.
Yes.
So he wasn't that old, but yeah, at that point, he's finally innocent. He's reintegrated in the army on the 13th of July 1906.
To get all his medals back.
Yeah. But he requests retirement in June 1907 because he's too old at that point.
Yeah.
Too old to be in the army. And also, second thing is, not only he's old, but he's never going to get to general. He realizes that there's absolutely no way he's going to become general. So what's the point of staying in the army? He never asked for any damages or any reparations from anyone. All he wanted is to be found innocent from the crime he didn't commit. That reminds me of the A-Team. During the ceremony of moving Zola's ashes to Pantheon, which happens on that same year, a far-right journalist tried to assassinate Dreyfus for some reason. Dreyfus is shot twice, but he's only injured in one of his arms.
This guy can't get a break.
Yeah. But the best of all, because again, nothing is that simple, the journalist is called Louis Grégory, and he's acquitted.
For crying out loud.
He actually shot a guy twice in front of lots of witnesses during a state ceremony.
Holy shit.
And he's acquitted. Dreyfus serves in the army during World War I, including in Verdun and Chemin des Dames.
Wow.
My great-grandfathers were there too.
Yeah.
And he dies on the 12th of July, 1935. Picard, who's also reintegrated into the army in 1906.
Mm-hmm.
And like Dreyfus, gets promotion backfilled.
Okay.
From when he was sent to prison and the time he spent out of the army.
Of course. And he's not Jewish, so he's not got not got that millstone around his neck.
And he ends up brigadier general at some point.
Okay, that's
And
good.
He's even war minister from 1906 to 1909.
Oh, wait, he really did make it to the top.
Yep. And he dies in 1914 in a horse accident.
Oh, no.
And that's pretty much the end of the story this time. So Dreyfus is innocent, finally.
I am just astounded by just the sheer breadth and depth of that story. I mean, never has one piece of paper had so much impact.
Oh, it changed society.
So much. It's the one piece of paper that's almost more deadly than Chamberlain's piece of paper when he came from Germany.
Yes, because the Second World War would have happened with that paper or not anyway.
Yeah.
Whereas the letter that was found in the bin in the German embassy actually changed society completely in France. Dreyfus is still around now because it's still referred to and it's still in everybody's mind. Everybody here knows about it.
Mm.
You learn about it at school.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know all the details because you don't spend hours and hours on it when you're a kid. But you learn about it. You learn about everything that that's happened as a consequence of that case. And it has completely changed society. Mm. And The worst thing that has happened is it increased the anti-Semitism in France by a huge amount.
Mm.
There's a Lithuanian philosopher, I can't remember his name, who lived in France. So he moved from Lithuania to France.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the reason why he moved there is because his dad, who was also a philosopher, told him that a country that is ready to destroy itself over the guilt of a Jew is a good country.
Yeah.
Because it means that you're not guilty from the start. There's always going to be somebody who's going to understand what's happening and be on your side. And that is a good country.
Mm-hmm.
But that didn't exist before. Before that, nobody cared about the fact that you were Jewish because it's just, you're Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, who cares?
Mm.
Because of the Dreyfus affair, that completely changed. And today, there's still things that are happening against Jews, for example, in France, like cemeteries that are desecrated and... Well, we covered a case of a synagogue being bombed in the 80s.
Yes.
None of that would have happened without the Dreyfus affair.
Mm.
So it has a huge amount of consequence, that tiny piece of paper that contained nothing.
Yes. And it's crazy. And if you've made it to the end of the story, well done.